River God, Ancient Egypt, Book 1, written by Wilbur Smith and read by Mark Meadows.
The river lay heavily upon the desert, bright as a spill of molten metal from a furnace. The sky smoked with heat haze, and the sun beat down upon it all with the strokes of a coppersmith's hammer. In the mirage, the gaunt hills flanking the Nile seemed to tremble to the blows. Our boat sped close in beside the papyrus beds, near enough for the creaking of the water buckets of the shadouf on their long counterbalanced arms to carry from the fields across the water. The sound harmonized with the singing of the girl in the bows. Lustris was 14 years of age. The Nile had begun its latest flood on the very day that her red woman's moon had flowered for the first time, a coincidence that the priests of Hapi had viewed as highly propitious. Lustris, the woman's name that they had then chosen to replace her discarded baby name, meant Daughter of the Waters. I remember her so vividly on that day. She would grow more beautiful as the years passed, become more poised and regal, but never again would that glow of virgin womanhood radiate from her so overpoweringly. Every man aboard, even the warriors at the rowing benches, was aware of it. Neither I nor any one of them could keep our gaze off her. She filled me with a sense of my own inadequacy and a deep and poignant longing. For although I am a eunuch, I was gelded only after I had known the joy of a woman's body.
Taita, she called to me, sing with me.
And when I obeyed, she smiled with pleasure. My voice was one of the many reasons that, whenever she was able, she kept me near her. My tenor complimented her lovely soprano to perfection. We sang one of the old peasant love songs that I had taught her, and which was still one of her favourites. My heart flutters up like a wounded quail when I see my beloved's face, and my cheeks bloom like the dawn sky to the sunshine of his smile. From the stern, another voice joined with ours. It was a man's voice, deep and powerful, but it lacked the clarity and purity of my own. If my voice was that of a dawn-greeting thrush, then this was the voice of a young lion. Lustris turned her head, and now her smile shimmered like the sunbeams on the surface of the Nile. Although the man upon whom she played that smile was my friend, perhaps my only true friend, still I felt the bitter gall of envy burn the back of my throat. Yet I forced myself to smile at Tanis, as she did, with love. Tanis's father, Pianki, Lord Harab, had been one of the grandees of the Egyptian nobility, but his mother had been the daughter of a freed Tehenu slave. Like so many of her people, she had been fair-headed and blue-eyed. She had died of the swamp fever while Tanis was still a child, so my memory of her was imperfect. However, the old women said that seldom before had such beauty as hers been seen in either of the two kingdoms. On the other hand, I had known and admired Tanis's father before he lost all his vast fortune and the great estates that had once almost rivaled those of Pharaoh himself. He had been of dark complexion, with Egyptian eyes the colour of polished obsidian, a man with more physical strength than beauty, but with a generous and noble heart, some might say too generous and too trusting, for he had died destitute, with his heart broken by those he had thought his friends, alone in the darkness, cut off from the sunshine of Pharaoh's favour.